Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for October the 30th, 2017. This is David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hello, David, and hello to everybody out there. Tonight, our special guest is internationally acclaimed and award-winning filmmaker Rick Burns. We will talk about his documentary entitled VA, The Human Costs of War. The film will air on your local PBS station next Monday, November the 6th. Rick Burns' many films have included collaboration on the famous 1990 PBS series, The Civil War, which he produced with his brother Ken and co-wrote with Jeffrey C. Ward. Since founding Steeplechase Films in 1989, Rick Burns has directed some of the most distinguished programs for PBS. He is perhaps best known for his eight-part series entitled New York, a documentary film, which received wide public and critical acclaim. His films dealing with the impact of war have included his 2012 film, Death in the Civil War, and his 2015 film, Dead of Honor, which examines the reality of war and disability, featuring interviews with some of the country's most prominent disabled veterans. Back to you, David.
Thank you. Rick Burns is joining us by phone from literally the other side of the planet. China, in fact, where he is working on another project and where it is already Tuesday morning. So let's welcome Rick Burns to the Veterans News Hour. How are you, Rick?
So good. Thanks so much for having me, David and Richard. It's really, really an honor to be with you this evening, or my morning, well, evening.
Yes, that's our privilege. So I know your time is limited, so let's jump right into discussing your new film, The VA, The Human Costs of War. What should our listeners know about the purpose and the scope of this film?
Well, you know, the VA has been so much in the news again over the last 5 years, especially since the 2014 Phoenix wait time scandals. And in fact, it's a cyclical reality for the VA. As people who know the history of the VA will point out, it kind of goes through cycles of scandal and then quiet and then another war and then scandal again. But I think what we wanted to do is find out what's all the noise about? How did this really come about? And I think that the biggest takeaway we would want your listeners to have, which I don't think will come as any surprise to them, is that the VA is at the heart and core of the social contract of America. I mean, there's really no more important government agency. It stands for the bond between government and all the individual citizens, and the duty of care that's owed to the veterans is sort of, unbridgeable. It's not, it cannot be in any way foreshortened. And what we wanted to do is find out how it is that this most crucial of all agencies has ended up repeatedly over time, and in fact quite recently, been in trouble. And we were really struck by what we found out.
I see. And what surprised you? I know you do a lot of research for all your films. What surprised you, if anything, about the VA as you did, dig into the details?
Well, first of all, it's got to be the most misunderstood agency in the federal government. I don't think that many Americans know. I certainly didn't know before starting the project the deep, deep link between the Veterans Administration, or the Department of Veterans Affairs, as it's now called, and the entire American medical establishment. 70% of the doctors in America, VA and non-VA, get their training in part or whole through the VA. Astonishing fact. The American healthcare system is based on this deep, deep interpenetration of the VA and medical delivery in America. The research, not driven by profit incentive, but rather driven by ends and innovation, is extraordinary. And the number of things, breakthroughs that have come out of the veteran VA over the last 50 years, 60 years since the Second World War is astonishing. So that there's simply, not only is it at the heart and soul of the American healthcare system, it's also on the forefront of medical innovation for afflictions which are, primarily military in origin, but also for things that affect the entire body politic of America, you know, military and non-military. So this deep way in which this extraordinary agency is kind of, you know, the beating heart of American healthcare system was a huge, huge surprise for us. I think finally, the fact, what we found was that for the second largest agency, only behind the Pentagon in terms of the number of employees, and for all the complexity of its history since the 1920s, 1930s, it's a very legible history, and the problems are actually fairly easy to describe. And it has to do with the deep-rooted ambivalence Americans have about health care and the national government. No one disputes that wounded veterans need to be taken care of and taken care of well. But there's a tremendous ambivalence at the heart of American society about how much government should be involved in the process of delivering health care. And that ambivalence is expressed in the frequent discrepancies between what members of Congress say they wish to do for veterans in terms of how they mandate the goals and vision and ends of the agency, and then, on the other hand, what they're willing to put, you know, how they're willing to pony up in terms of bottom line funding for it. And that discrepancy between what Congress asks the VA to do and what Congress is willing to fund the VA to do is really very simply at the heart of every one of the problems you've ever heard over the last, you know, 70 years at the VA, and very much at the heart of the Phoenix wait time scandal.
Well, I know Richard Hurley and I represent a lot of veterans, and in the last year we've been tracking a lot of the proposed legislation. One of the issues deals with to what extent can they correct the health care side of the VA to make up for, you know, the flaws that you mentioned in the 2014 Phoenix and other hospital scandals. And then there's the, you know, the current issue about, you know, should portions of the veterans care be transitioned more to the private system or not? Are these sorts of things that that came up in some of your interviews?
Absolutely. And what we were really struck by, David, was the broad consensus among people from every point of the political compass that we spoke to, from academics, from scholars, from people inside the VA, from former Secretary McDonald, from David Shulkin, who we interviewed when he was still in New York before he came to Washington to run the agency. Really, there's a very broad consensus about, you know, what the issues are. No one really believes the agency should be privatized. The idea that some of the health care that veterans who are not service-connected in terms of their disability, but rather are aging veterans and developing all the complaints that one can as any normal citizen in middle and old age, the idea that some of those medical needs can be efficiently parceled out to in an efficient and logical way to the private healthcare system, I think nobody disputes that that can be done. But when it comes to the core delivery of the agency, service to veterans who have some kind of service-connected, combat-related injury, that has to be funded and funded fully. And I think that, you know, there's going to be a kind of an honesty that not just the VA, but members of Congress have to have with the American people in determining how much it costs. If you want to deliver full health care to all veterans, whether or not they've had a combat-related injury for the rest of their life, in return for having stood up and said, I'm willing to give my life for my country, then we're going to also have to face the fact that the cost of providing that health care, not just to veterans with combat-related injuries, but to all veterans full stop, that's going to be vastly, vastly more of a cost than anybody has ever been willing to pay for. So I think that's the central debate. So first, absolutely, let's clear all the way, and I think that Secretary Shulkin has been doing an amazing job in terms of cutting through the red tape, stamping his foot, and insisting on results in a kind of a patient-centered care system for the VA, and then at the same time try to step back and sort out these longer-range financial and administrative issues, which have to do with, are we willing for the VA to be a social service agency, an agency which is essentially socialized medicine for the 9 million American men and women who are part of the system, or do we not want to do that? That's a question, that's a political and a human question that has to be put to the American people and then run through Congress. Once that's fixed, and I'm not saying that's going to be an easy thing, I think the rest of the VA can and should sort of continue business as usual operating what is really one of the finest healthcare systems and certainly one of the largest and most important in the world.
Wow, that's I appreciate your insight. I know Richard Hurley has some questions for you, Richard.
Yeah, that was a lot right there, Rick. You know, being on the ground floor of this, I tend to have a different perspective on it. But anyway, in putting together your documentary, who did you interview for the film?
We interviewed Secretary McDonald when he was still at the head of the agency, David Shulkin, Paul Rykoff, you know, who's with the Iraq and Afghanistan, Bank of America. He went to Congress and talked to Jeff Miller from Florida.
I think our reception may be breaking up just a bit for our listeners. Rick Burns is calling from Shanghai, China, so please bear with us. Rick, can you hear us?
That was pretty interesting stuff that, you know, his perspective on it. What an insight that he has.
Well, keep trying. And meanwhile, what I wanted to mention was, as Richard Hurley had indicated, Rick Burns has produced a number of well-known films, including several that have dealt with the impact of war, including a 2012 film, Death in the Civil War, and his 2015 film, Dead of Honor, which really explores the issues of disabilities suffered by American veterans and really just started a dialogue about how Americans treat their veterans. And I wanted to ask Rick, and hopefully we'll get him back on the line, about how this new film, which will be shown a week from tonight on PBS on November the 6th, called VA, The Human Cost of War, how this is really kind of a continuation of some themes that he had started in some of his earlier films. I hope that our listeners will check out not only the film that will be shown next Monday, the 6th, but also his other films, including Dead of Honor.
In a moving vehicle and domicilium.
I see. Well, see if you can try him again, Doug, and I appreciate all your help on this. But for our listeners also to check out Rick Burns' other films, including Death in the Civil War. He's working on many other projects, and his website is easy to remember. It's rickburns.com, and it's Rick spelled R-I-C, burns.com. And you can find out a lot more about all his films, past, present, and future projects. He's in China working on a film right now on a project for one of his upcoming films. So hopefully if we get him back on the line, we'll ask him about those.
I think I'm back with you guys.
While you were gone, I was just telling our listeners how, you know, your 2015 film, Dead of Honor, also explored the issues of disabilities for veterans, and how I wanted to ask you how this current film perhaps is a kind of continuation of that theme, exploring more specifically the role of the VA. Is that kind of a fair assessment? And I know Richard Hurley has some questions.
I think that that's a very fair assessment, and I think part of a hope that we have that we can kind of bridge the civil, help bridge in some small way the civilian military divide, and especially bring, you know, these issues which are really so unknown to the 99% of Americans who don't serve and therefore who don't become part of the veteran population. I think that that's really at the core of it. You've got it exactly right.
I see. Very good. Richard Hurley, back over to you.
Yeah, Rick, before we lost you there, I was asking you who you interviewed for the film. I know you'd said Secretary Shulkin and Bob McDonald, and who are some of the others?
You know, incredible scholar Linda Bilmes from Harvard, and Colin Moore from the University of Hawaii, David Phillips from the New York Times, you know, Scott Davis, of course, a famous whistleblower, you know, Representatives Miller, Moulton, and O'Rourke. So what we were trying to, well, as people who have had a little bit more of a direct contact with the business end of what it means, the parents of suicide victims, veterans themselves, trying to get as rounded as possible a view of the situation. And as I said before, what we struck was not that the solutions are easy, but that the problem is actually fairly clear and has to do with a lack of information and accountability and a lack of an ability to be transparent. I think the American people with themselves and the American government with the American people about what the costs of health care are going to be. And if we're going to have a system which is open to all veterans in perpetuity from the day they sign up, then that's going to cost, as Linda Belmez puts it, $1 trillion over the next half century.
Wow.
Not 1 cent of that $1 trillion long tail is in any way provided for by the annual operating budget of the VA. That's a big, whopping problem from a long-term funding point of view. And the fact that we kind of bury that problem under, that it's not well-known, that it's not debated, is, I think, part of the problem.
I see. Now, Rick, as far as the human cost of war, which is part of the title of this film, I know you've explored this in some of your other previous films. What insights and impressions would you wish to offer based on this new film, as well as perhaps your other war-related films?
You know, I think it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, that, you know, from the beginning, the inception of our country, and America's not unique in this, there's a sense that the willingness to lay down your life potentially for your country is the basic, you know, social contract civilians to the government, and that in return the government owes, as you know, as Lincoln put it so eloquently, duty of care, you know, take care, you know, of those who bore the battle and their widow and their orphan. So that's, we kind of all grasp that. It's almost impossible to find anybody who disagrees with that formulation. And that, I think that in a society where, you know, most places in the world do not have a separation between whatever their veterans administration and aftercare is called and their War Department or their Department of Defense. But in America, we've very clearly divided these two agencies. And what happens is that the VA is always the caboose in the military expenditure train. It's always coming after. And I can't quite see why that should be the case. I mean, I think that many people feel that pulling together, as Jeff Miller from Florida put it, making as seamlessly as possible, as Paul Rykoff put it from a completely different point of the compass, to make sure you can pipe fit really, really firmly these two agencies, is one way we're going to be able to understand that the human cost of war is the cost that we're going to incur the minute we send men and women into battle on any particular occasion. And that's not a shoe that drops later, even though temporarily that's the case. That's going to be something we need to build into cost of war that we anticipate when we go to war, that we budget for, and that we make as sort of an infrangible commitment to making good on.
Right. And we see this we represent a lot of Vietnam War veterans who are still submitting claims for Agent Orange diseases, et cetera. So I'm sure back in the 60s,
right,
they weren't thinking that 50 years later they were going to be spending billions of dollars for the care of these veterans. Now, Rick, I want to ask you, this film is due to air a week from today on Monday, November 6th on PBS. That's correct?
That's correct, yep.
And
we're really sort of proud of that. And
listeners, hopefully we'll be able to purchase their own copy of the film sometime soon. Is that also true?
Yes, they will. It'll be available through PBS.org, either immediately or soon after the broadcast.
Very good. Over to you, Richard Hurley.
Thank you. Hey, Rick, just to give you another one of our cases, we just resolved a veteran who served from 1947 to 1949 and had been fighting the VA for 70 years. For a diagnosis that was made back in 1947, and we found the diagnosis within the file. But he's 89 years old today, and he's still fighting because, unfortunately, the VA gave him a very minimal rating. And it's just another one of the examples that David and I go through all the time, daily, when we're fighting the VA, and it's very difficult. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Well, that's
you.
What
I know. You're.
I just think that that's such a striking, and it shows how it's not so easy to determine whether the health problem a veteran is suffering from is connected or not. It sometimes takes technology that hasn't been invented yet to determine for sure that that's the case. Things we know about, you know, CTE and PTSD and all sorts of other issues are things that, you know, we've more than suspected for 50 or 60 years or since shell shock in the First World War. But the ability to really understand what that means has itself evolved and progressed, and it may turn out that people are diagnosed with what are clearly battle-related injuries long after the battle. So in some sense, it's not that easy to make the determination quickly between veterans, you know, who are service-connected and veterans who aren't. I mean, there's just, and that's why this hard, hard question for the American people, which has to do, I think, with something not just for veterans, but certainly veterans are right at the center of it, is how will health care be delivered in this country? And what role will government have? What role should government have?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I know your time is limited with us, but can you share us a little bit about your upcoming project that is taking you all the way to China? What's that about?
You know, we recently completed, on the heels of completing the film about VA and the human cost of war, we completed a film, a quite a bit longer film, about the history of the Chinese Exclusion Act, which has taken us to China now, where we were premiering it in Shanghai at the NYU Shanghai campus. You know, this piece of legislation from the 1880s made it impossible for all but a handful of Chinese to come to immigrate to America, and made it impossible for even Chinese citizens who were here to become Chinese immigrants who were here to become citizens. This law from 1882 till 1943, and still kind of de facto in effect for another 20, 25 years after that, you know, is a unique piece of legislation. It said if you were racially Chinese, nationally Chinese, you couldn't come here and you couldn't become an American citizen. You know, something about your culture, something about your biology, something about your background made you unassimilable to the American experiment. It has been the core, it is the piece of legislation that has stood at the core of how America has defined who gets to come in, who doesn't get to come in. When are we going to be a gatekeeping nation swinging the gate shut? When are we going to pull it back open?
Wow. Rick, I know you're working on many other films as well. Any others that you'd like to share with us?
You know, we're finishing up a film about the English neurologist Oliver Sacks, writer and neurologist, incredible doctor, writer, a kind of humanitarian who died 2 years ago in his 80s. And we're doing a film about his life and work, which is really sort of a very moving example of someone trying to sort of, you know, bridge another kind of divide, again, on the healthcare issue. You know, how do we understand what's going on inside people who have neuroatypical circumstances of one kind or another, whether they're brain damaged or have Tourette's syndrome or are colorblind or any one of a sort of galaxy of ailments. And Oliver Sacks made it his life's work to try to sort of get inside as empathetically and as precisely as possible the experience of people in those situations. So we're really excited about that film as well.
Wow, that's awesome. And really, really want to thank you so much for being on our show tonight. And I think we have you have a very unique perspective and access that I know a lot of our audience, veterans and their families primarily, really value. And that's the vantage point of being able to interview people like Dr. Shulkin, Bob McDonald, members of Congress, and others who have special insights about the VA, which affects so many people. And I'd like to thank you again for being on our show. Over to you, Richard.
No, I want to echo David's thoughts there, Rick. We really appreciate you coming on tonight. I've been a fan of most of your films there that I've had a chance to watch, and I had the Civil War in my library, as a matter of fact. And it's a
I'm honored and really, really touched to hear that. And also, it's great to be with you both and have the opportunity to talk about this stuff. You know, it's really I think there's reasons for hope. You know, Secretary Shulkin, I think, was, you know, easily the best or among the best of the cabinet picks. You know, I think, you know, if anybody can fix it, I think he's going to be part of the answer.
Oh, very good. If I could just add one more thing. Rick, since you're over on that side of the planet, I hope you can do something so that we don't end up in a war with North Korea that their film's made about in a few years. So,
You know, it's really interesting in that regard. To think about the circumstance that we're in, so much closer to where the, you know, where the rubber meets the road on those questions and issues. And one can only hope that you know, tempers cool down and a saner point of view kind of begins to prevail. It is, talk about a sticky and intractable problem. You know, we've been in a state of war with North Vietnam since, you know, for 67 years now, that's a complicated situation to be in, and the geopolitical situation in this part of the world is sort of wrapped around that stalemate, which thank God is not a military one at this point, but has been really hard to negotiate. You know, maybe a David Shulkin will step up and find his or her way through to figure out how to you know, bring the peninsula together, or at the very least pull us back from the edge of something which I haven't experienced since, as a 7-year-old, the Cuban Missile Crisis was aborting.
Right. Well, we certainly share those sentiments, and thank you so much for being on our show. Again, the film will show next Monday, November the 6th on PBS. It's entitled VA, The Human Cost of War. And we thank our special guest, Rick Burns, for being with us tonight. Be safe, Rick. Enjoy your time in China.
Thanks for putting up with the vagrant communication.
Oh, we understand. Take care. Okay, wow, that's I'm looking forward to seeing his film next week on the VA and the Human Cost of War. It seems like a much-needed examination of the VA as well as the impact of war on America's veterans and their families. So over to you, Richard.
Yeah, I had a chance to see the Bonnie, his wife, sent me the and sent you as well, the trailer, and that looked really good. I was very intrigued by Rick's perspective on it because while I hope he's correct about Shulkin and some of these other people that he interviewed, you know, David, you and I we're in the trenches on all this stuff, and I'm not as optimistic about the future of the VA as it pertains to taking care of our veterans. You know, today I had a full day working in the office, and you know, I just ran into some basic incompetence that should not be. I mean, David, I hate to beat a dead horse on this stuff, but you know, it's just, you know, losing emails and stuff that just should not happen, and it's affecting the veteran. You know,
right.
I mean, you know, it doesn't take a lot to trace an email, to track down an email, to verify what a veteran's compensation is. And then when they can't do that, and then that affects the veteran, and then they say, well, we're going to have to relook at the veteran's case again. You know, I understand why the veteran gets so frustrated. I understand why the veteran gives up. And, you know, I can't help but think that this is intentional conduct by the VA, notwithstanding Rick Burns' attitude, perspective on the VA trying to get better. But I just don't know when we're going to pivot on the VA and see improvement.
Well, one thing that that Rick Burns did mention is that the issue is really for the American people and for the Congress to decide how they're going to approach these issues of health care. And certainly it is extremely expensive. He had some figures, the estimates of the financial costs. And one thing that we've observed in the last 9 months is that as divided as Congress is, Washington, D.C. is, on nearly every issue, they seem to be uniquely unified, because the legislation that passes on veterans' issues tends to have bipartisan support, and rarely does it have many votes against it. Now, of course, one of the toughest issues touches on the healthcare thing that Rick Burns was discussing earlier, which is you know, allocation of resources. Very expensive. To what extent should the VA be covering, you know, non-war-related or non-service-connected disabilities for veterans? And also, you know, the fact that there is some push because of limited VA resources to send more veterans into the private sector. All those issues are now going to receive more attention from Congress, at least in the next month, and if they can't solve things, then sometime into the next year. But it will be interesting to see whether the bipartisanship that we've seen so far this year continues into the health care issues. The Veterans Choice Program, to allow veterans in certain situations to seek care rather than have to wait a long time or travel long distances to get medical care so that they can get that care in the private sector. But then we're facing overall shortages of medical providers in both the VA system as well as the private sector. So that impacts everyone. As well. But I'm looking forward to seeing Rick Burns' film next Monday. I'm sure you are too, Richard. And I encourage our listeners to check it out. And if they can't watch it live next Monday evening on PBS, check your local PBS station to confirm the specific time. But as Rick Burns said, it will be available very soon for purchase on PBS website and also his website, although he didn't mention it, Rick Burns, RICBurns.com. And you can check out his other films as well, several of which deal with military veterans issues. So fascinating topic. I'm sure glad he was able to share some of his valuable time with us this evening. Richard, any other thoughts before we move on to the news, national news?
I do. You know, when people are watching the documentary, I want the viewers to remember that there are two sides of the VA. And we, David, you and I talk about this all the time. There's the medical side and the compensation side. And by and large, I think the medical side does a pretty good job. Yes, there's been situations in Phoenix a few years ago, and then we had the situation that you and I reported on out in Denver. Then there was a situation in Baltimore. So there are situations on the healthcare side that have been a problem. But it's the compensation side that really has these veterans frustrated. Because as I, you know, try to be as basic as I possibly can, you know, if you were working for a Walmart and you fell off the ladder while you were working, you would have a workers' compensation case. Therefore, if you're working for the United States government in the military and you get injured, why shouldn't you receive the same sort of compensation? I know it sounds very basic, but it is very basic. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, that's by and large the work that we do here at Corey and Hurley. So I'll be interested to see in the film and in the trailer that I saw. I didn't see anything touching on the compensation side. But we'll see what happens. You know, David, you were just bringing something up before about the, you know, the cost of war, the human cost of war. And, you know, I wonder if our people who are sending these men and women out into harm's way before they do so shouldn't start putting in the calculation what it's going to cost to take care of that veteran when he comes home and put that in before they send our men and women off to fight. Just a thought, because as we've seen, what was the number, $1 trillion? I think he
right,
said.
And I think if you remember our guests from several weeks ago, Dr. Nettie Crawford and Dr. Catherine Lutz from Brown University, the Cost of War project that they have at Brown University, that they've tried to assess the financial cost and human cost of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and it's in many trillions of dollars, far exceeding any very vague estimate that might have been given early on by the Bush administration when we went to war, which certainly did not, as far as I could tell, factor in the long-term financial, whether it's the extraordinarily high medical care for veterans or as well as the disability compensation issues that we see. There hardly is a conversation about that. So hopefully Rick Burns' current film as well as his prior films like Debt of Honor will help bring much-needed attention to those issues because, as he also pointed out, as Rick Burns has pointed out before, that those that serve in the military comprise a very tiny, like 1% of the U.S. population. And because it is a volunteer force, there's not a draft, as everyone knows, that the military seems to become further and further isolated from the rest of the country. And I've heard some say, some of our clients, you know, the saying is, Marines go off to war and America goes to the shopping mall. And, you know, after you know, after 9/11, one of the things that President George W. Bush said, you know, was trying to, with probably good intentions, foster some sense of let's return to normalcy, if that's possible, by saying, you know, he didn't want Americans to you know, change their habits, continue doing what they do. Well, I understand that from one perspective, but the other perspective is he's then launching not only the war in Afghanistan, but then a year and a half after that, in March of 2003, the war, the much more controversial war, the invasion of Iraq. And we still have troops in both countries today, so many years later. And again, it's the very tiny 1% of the country, of the population, that serves in the military. And they're the ones that they and their families are the ones that are really bearing the burden of these wars. That I know some of Rick Burns' prior films, including Dead of Honor, that in some of our prior wars, World War One, even to some extent World War Two, that when the veterans returned home disabled, there was huge societal pressures for the veterans, for their disabilities to be hidden, literally hidden, you know, that you know, cover up things so people would not know that they'd lost an eye or lost a limb. And because there was, I guess, the fear that people would you know, should not be exposed to the true cost, the full cost of war. And we know now that there are tremendous costs of war, and those continue on, not just with the battle casualties, which everyone will hear about, but also the unseen, the psychological injuries, the fact that, you know, 20, 22 veterans commit suicide every day, and in our prior shows we've highlighted that issue, you know, Richard. So there's a lot of other issues to talk about, and to even expand further this issue of the cost of war, the human factors, the financial factors, the societal factors, and really what it means, and perhaps, not perhaps, but definitely that those that make those decisions need to be examining alternatives. And that's why I ask them, you know, towards the end of the interview, which was, you know, hopefully that we can avoid a war with North Korea, so that there aren't films being made about a war in North Korea in the near future. There is much at stake.
Well, David, before we get to coaching in the care and some of the other positive things that the VA does, why don't you give us some news that's going on there in D.C.?
Right. Well, kind of follow on the issue that we were talking about, which is the healthcare side of the VA. It's a hot topic, the issue of reforming and improving the VA healthcare system. This next month should bring more activity in Washington, D.C., as Congress, the VA, and veteran service organizations, they all collectively try to address the details of a proposed plan that will not only replace the current, quote, Veterans Choice, unquote, program, but will supposedly enable the VA to modernize large parts of its health care system. This plan, which the VA has titled the Veterans Care Act, and CARE, they've made into an acronym standing for Coordinated Access and Rewarding Experiences. Sound like another tortured Washington, D.C. acronym. Called Veterans Care Act. Gotta wonder what staffer stayed up late at night trying to come up with that. But this proposed legislation was recently unveiled in Washington. It has an overall structure that most veteran groups applaud, probably because they helped shape it. But, Richard, you and I know from our examination of some of the so-called reform legislation on the disability appeal system, just because major veteran groups are behind it doesn't mean that all veteran groups are behind it, or even that it's in the best interest of veterans at large, as opposed to the best interest of the VA bureaucracy, which is trying to, generally speaking, you know, preserve its own territory, its own turf, protect its employees, and do, you know, the least amount of work possible. As cynically as that may sound, we found that to be the case. So we'll have to see whether this Veterans Care Act, where it goes and what changes may follow, because both the House and the Senate Veteran Affairs Committees are expected to tinker with that, to offer their own replacement plans. The CHOICE program, if you recall, after the 2014 Phoenix Hospital scandal, which really did not it wasn't limited to the Phoenix VA hospital. That was just the test case that brought it to national media attention. There are many other VA hospitals that had the same problem of very long waiting times. And then the other scandal was the intentional falsification of the waiting time numbers, so it made it look like veterans were getting care faster than they were. And it also enabled the hospital administrators to receive their bonuses because they had good statistics, and everything is measured by statistics in Washington. But in any event, we'll see what this new legislation does with the CHOICE program. The Veterans CHOICE program was one of the solutions to the scandal in 2014. It was designed to say, well, if veterans have to wait a long time or travel a long distance for medical care, then they should be allowed to go to the private sector. But that program quickly ran into issues of funding as well as the administration of it. Was it really working for veterans? So we'll see what the next month, and if Congress can't do something in the next month before the holiday breaks, presumably they'll start or continue their efforts in January of 2018. What's interesting is that as a sign of controversy about the VA healthcare system reforms, some officials from the largest federal workers union have already attacked the program as, quote, a total dismantling of the department, unquote. It would allegedly jeopardize veteran services. So we'll see. There are different sides, different perspectives, and no doubt veterans, including our listening audience, will want to follow this story as events unfold in Washington over the near term. So back over to you, Richard.
Well, you know, we have that VA's Coaching in the Care program that is a very successful program. I've actually had an opportunity to speak to some veterans recently about that program, and they have utilized it. And if you are a family of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, you know, be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. Toll free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. And along those same lines, I think it's important to once again remind our listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. You can call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help that they needed. So help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255. 5-5 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. So let's preview next week's show. Our guest next week, November the 6th, will be Vietnam veteran Brian Wizard, who is a writer, an artist, and a filmmaker. He'll be on our November 6th show to discuss his experiences in Vietnam and his life after the war and how he has coped with post-traumatic stress with writing, art, music, and film. Our listeners may recall that Brian appeared on our show in May, but he'll be back next week to continue where we left off. Meanwhile, you can check out his website, which is brianwizard.com. That's brianwizard.com. He has books and artwork for sale, including his electronic or e-book entitled Smoke Ships, Always Leading the Way. And that's because Brian was a door gunner on a helicopter, on a Huey helicopter, called a smoke ship, where they would lay out a protective screen of smoke when they would lead a flight of helicopters into a landing zone or when they were evacuating them, when they were extracting them from a pickup zone, his chopper would lay out the smoke screen. So Brian has a lot of war stories he can share with us. He recently compiled what he calls the Brian Wizard's 21st Century Digital Vietnam War Anthology, and he made 4 books and a video available at a special discount price. Again, brianwizard.com is his website. may want to check those out before our November 6th show. He's an accomplished author, and he'll be sharing his insights to veterans about how they can write about their military experience, including to support a disability claim with the VA. So it should be another fascinating show. We hope our listeners will tune in.
Yeah, David, I remember the last time he was on, and I'd seen his video, and I still tell my kids about that him diving down when he was in the helicopter and picking off the North Vietnamese flag and taking off with the flag. And
yep.
I mean, that was pretty wild. Those guys are going pretty fast to go that low, being shot at, and grab that flag. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and you know, he was thinking in some ways about preserving the memories. He had a home video camera where he and other members of the chopper crew would take video of some of their missions, and not just the ones where they would steal the enemy flags from their camps. But
is that stealing?
Well, it gives you an idea of what those guys were dealing with. And Brian, when he was over there, he was 19, 20 years old. And as he'll tell us more next week, it really changed his life permanently, the experience of being in war and heavy combat for practically a year of time. Saw a lot of death and destruction. And, you know, wiser people have said before me, they've made the observation, you know, that in American culture, like the culture of practically every nation around the world, children are raised, you know, to avoid getting into harm's way themselves and to avoid and not to hurt other people. And yet, you know, think back to Vietnam when there was a draft and young men were drafted, and 6 months later they may find themselves in Vietnam where they're basically trained killers for their country in a war whose purpose was pretty murky and cloudy, you know, for most people. What were they doing there? Why were they fighting the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese? Was the issue communism? Was it? What was it? But anyone alive or who has studied history about the Vietnam War knows how divisive the war was. And what we see is, because we represent a lot of Vietnam veterans, and these guys are, you know, in their 60s, 70s now, and the ones we represent are the ones that typically were hurt the worst. And when we're talking about psychological injuries, you know, we can go back and trace their life history, and we typically do that in representing them, trace their life history about, you know, what type of life did they have before going to war, what was the war experience, and what has their life been like since then? And our guest next week, Brian Wizard, just really typifies what I'm talking about. So I hope listeners will tune in. Should be another good show. Again, we'd like to thank our
David,
special guest. Go ahead, Richard.
Well, you bring up a really good point, because I hear it every time that I represent a veteran, and they say, you know, how the 3, 4, or 5 years that they spend in the service, unbeknownst to them at the time, has changed their life for the rest of their life. And I think that's really the issue that we're grappling with as a society here in America, in terms of taking care of these veterans whose lives have been changed after a few years, or in some cases more than a few, and maybe they retired of service. And, you know, the average civilian, I don't really think, understands that. Yes, they watch movies, they hear people talk, they hear us talk, but I really don't think they really get it. And as Rick Burns said, until the American people get on board with all this, we're going to have a lot of work to do, David. Looking at that.
Yep. Yep. Well, again, Rick Burns' film is called VA, The Human Cost of War. It'll show on PBS next Monday, November 6th. Check your local PBS station for the specific time, and if you can't watch it then, look online, PBS website, or Rick Burns, rickburns.com, and you can purchase a copy, hopefully, in the very near future. We'd like to thank him for being our special guest tonight, talking with us all the way from Shanghai, China, and certainly enjoyed listening to his insights.
Pretty amazing.
Also,
huh?
Yeah, we'd like to thank our...
It's pretty amazing, all the way to China.
Yeah, we'd like to recognize our show sponsors for tonight's show, which includes the American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases involving the VA. We'd also like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for all his help in making this show and every show happen. And we'd like to invite our listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our show website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. That's bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. You can also find archived podcasts of our prior shows for your benefit, and including tonight's show, which should be available in a couple days on that website. So please tune in next week at the same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.